Well, welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
I'm Judy Nathans.
And today is October 5th, 2021, also known as Wild Card Day.
Yes.
In the American, well, actually not the American League, it's the American League Wild Card Game.
Right.
And for some of us who were here, I actually came to live in Cambridge in February of 1978. And come early October of 1978, I was still a diehard Yankee fan.
Okay.
And got to watch the Bucky Bleepin' Dent home run.
That was that year? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yes. And Carl Yastrzemski popping out to end the game, all of that as a Yankee fan. So, and now, many years later, we're here with the Yankees and the Red Sox for one-game playoff game.
Tonight
and now I'm a diehard Red Sox fan. So
yeah, well, it takes 45 years or whatever it is.
It took a while. Yeah. But I'm there. I've got some of my Boston Red Sox.
I see that. Yeah.
Behind me here.
Very nice. Well.
So anyway, it's
for ESPN many of us, 8 p.m. and I guess you can get it online if you don't have cable.
I think it's actually 8:08 p.m. Which is
it's 8:08, but you know. Whatever. Yeah.
But, you know, I think for some of us who were really starting to sort of bail out on the Red Sox a bit this year, the fact that we managed to pull it off,
at least
get to the wild card, is a victory in itself. So I'm not going to get too worked up one way or the other.
No.
The outcome of the game.
I wish I could have watched that game the other night. I only could follow it on my phone, just the score. And it was like, wow, it was 5-1 or something. And they only tied it, they won it. Unbelievable.
But well, I think, led all baseball and come from behind wins, didn't we?
Exactly. So this was and the Yankees, too. The Yankees, it was 0-0 in the ninth with the Tampa Bay Rays, and
nothing,
they got one run. Oh, my gosh.
No, this is pretty good October baseball so far. So, you know, so anyway, good luck to us all.
Yeah.
And, you know, that'll be happening, you know, pretty soon. So just in terms, there's a lot of things we could talk about here. Remember, it is now today being Tuesday. Is now exactly 4 weeks
until
the municipal election.
Okay, it's November what? What's that Tuesday?
November 2nd, Tuesday, November 2nd is election day.
Wow.
But you know, this year is very different than many previous years because not only is there regular in-person voting on election day, but now what was introduced last year with drop boxes,
the national election,
and at least until mid-December, Massachusetts allows no excuse absentee voting, better known as mail-in voting.
Right.
And there's also the early voting was implemented, at least temporarily, for the municipal elections, in addition to the state and federal elections. So, in some sense. Election day is in 3 weeks or less than 3 weeks. But for those who might choose to vote mail-in, it may even be earlier. So candidates are very aware of this because
that's true.
You know, they're not, it's not all time to, you know, sort of, you know, make the big hit 2 days before the election. I mean, you really have to, they have to kind of bring the clock forward quite a bit to be ready. So, you know, they're the big citywide mailings, and instead of getting a pound of mailers, you know, 3 days before the election, we're probably going to get them in a couple of weeks, you know, you know, well in advance and before many people, perhaps, you know, nobody knows right yet what the fraction is going to be, how many people will choose to do the mail-in voting, how many people will choose to do
voting. I mean, the mail-in, at least you can drop it off, I think, even in a ballot box, right? The day of, couldn't you?
Well, that would not be a wise thing.
Why?
A drop box, yes.
That's what I meant, the drop box.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But there are everybody, just like last year, there's a lot of warnings going out about
if you're going to mail
the U.S. Postal Service, and make sure you do it way in advance.
But people that want to, you know, tune into the forums, which who knows how many those are, some of those are still taking place.
They're still taking
place. The third week in October. Yeah.
That's true. That's really true. Yeah. So, so anyway, it's, you know, plenty to come. There was a flock of, you know, interesting election related things. I posted a lot of it having to do with there's you know, the all about voter registration deadline is, I believe, when is that? That's October 13th.
Is it?
Yeah, so this soon. Is a week yeah. from tomorrow for registration. But if you're watching this show, you're a registered voter, right? I'm sure.
Probably, all of the, how many that watch. Oh, they eventually yeah. watch. I saw 65 on YouTube.
You're right. So anyway, that's relevant. There were some precincts that had been moved last year or have been moved again mm-hmm. or moved back. Places, remember last year, a lot of things like nursing facilities that have also doubled as polling places could not right. be used. So
and schools also because yeah, of the COVID stuff.
Yeah, so there was a lot of reconfiguration of polling places. So settled on all of that. So that's all posted on a city website. I also have it on mine. Mm-hmm. A lot of important stuff. And of course, there's still the candidates and people sort of should be aware of that. So I think maybe we'll come back to that. I thought maybe we could sort of just touch on some of the things that have sort of been happening up at City Hall lately. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is sort of it mystifies a lot of people is what took place last night.
Oh, with the tax hearing?
Yeah, it's technically ever since the mid-1980s, I believe, we've had tax classification. So technically it was the, you could call it the tax rate hearing or the tax mm-hmm. classification hearing, but basically it's where the city council goes through this ritual of, in this case, it was 11 votes. Actually, 2 years ago, it was 13, or 1 year ago, it was 13, of these sort of statutory votes, that basically enable the city to skew the taxes so that they put much more of the burden on commercial taxes than on residential. That's a provision in state law to do it. You don't have to classify. You can just have a flat tax.
So we can do it and the state allows that. Is that what
you're saying? That's a provision under state law. So we have always chosen to do so. Mm-hmm. The philosophy is because, and I have to say, this is one of those situations where the tax laws actually affect decisions on development and urban planning because, whether they say it outright or not, the fact is that if commercial development is a cash cow in terms of taxes, which
65%.
Yeah. So that helps to keep residential taxes much lower than they would otherwise be considering the property values.
Right.
It has become a strategy to sort of, continue to develop and redevelop commercial property in order to basically to keep the taxes in a reasonable shape. And
did you hear that one public commenter, there was very few that said really property owners should pay more.
Yeah, but here's one thing I have to say about that is that this is an important point.
Okay.
So yes, you divide into commercial and residential, but there's also this provision that they also had to vote last night, which is to adopt the residential exemption, which used to be 20% of the property value was basically,
and
you didn't get paid tax on it. And then there was a change in law where it was enabling legislation that would allow cities and towns to exempt 30%, and we opted into that.
That's a lot.
And so you can have a very high property value for your building, but then you chop out 30%, and then you only pay tax on the remainder. Well, here's the catch, and I think this is actually a flaw in the state law. Okay. It's a flat residential exemption, a fixed amount. Okay. Regardless whether you are the owner of a 20-unit building that you live in, or a 3-unit building, or a condo. So if you're like me, I own a triple decker, so I get one residential exemption for my building. So that's good, I'm grateful.
Okay.
But if you're a condo owner, your valuation is, whatever it is, say 800,000, you take out 400 some odd thousand of the valuation and you only pay tax on what's left,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which means that condo owners pay proportionately far less of a share.
Even though what they're going for now is the appraisal of condos is as high as some older property owners' properties.
Yeah, but typically not, yes, there are some, but typically not. So if you actually look at the average tax bill for condo owners,
Yeah.
You know, like, let's just say if you just take it as a simple model, a triple decker, yeah. you might think, well, if fair was fair, if you had a building that was either a triple decker or three condos, mm-hmm. right, the city should get more or less the same tax in that building. But because if three condo owners and they're all resident, then you subtract off 400,000, yeah. like 1.2 million is exempted. And then the condo owners pay only on this what's so left, and it's relatively low.
Do you think that should be changed, man? I know Dennis Carlone has brought that up too. I think.
Yeah, and when Michael Sullivan was mayor some years ago.
When was that? Yeah, years ago.
It was a good long while ago, but many years ago, there was a notion about actually going to the state legislature and lobbying to have. You know, some changes made to that, you know. I think what I can do here is even just sort of pop over here.
Oh, you have a tax rate thing. Yeah,
yeah, just to take a quick look here, you know. So basically, you know, the property tax levy is definitely going up, you know, and, you know, the annual increase in the levy certainly are going faster than inflation, right? Okay. So they, you know, but the more the valuation goes up, the more they typically drop the rates to match mm-hmm. that. So the valuations have gone up, but this year for the residential, the tax rate in fact went up a little bit rather than go down. So normally up the valuation, they drop the rate so that the levy remains more or less similar.
Okay, so let me ask you something. So that means like, for instance, I'm looking at the first line there. This is before you would get a residential exemption, say on the three family.
This is on whatever the value is. So on whatever it is. After
But all right. So you owe, let's say, 7,000 on that three family. But if you're an owner occupier of that three family,
this is the tax bill after the residential exemption.
Oh, it is.
Yes. So for example, to give an example of a three family, if a three family had been cut into three condos.
Right.
And if you just went by the medians, which may or may not be less fair.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So then the city's basically getting about $4,900 out of the three mm-hmm. condos, whereas they're getting over $7,200 out of me as a three family owner.
Yeah.
So the condo owners have been getting a very, very, very
sweet deal.
You know, and, you know, whether that's, you know, the thing is, it always happens to be the biggest classification property now, which means that. If you change that, you'll make a lot of condo owners unhappy.
Yeah, but everyone's screaming, we don't want development, but we also don't want luxury condos. But where is the taxes going to come from?
Right. Well, exactly. Right.
Affordable housing? I don't know.
I am in no way professing to say what is right. But one thing I will say, though, you know, because it was part of the discussion last night, is that so I think the parade began with Dennis Carlone, followed by Sabrina Wheeler, followed by Zondervan or in some order.
Yeah.
But basically,
Patty Nolan too.
Right. But I actually agreed with what she had to say.
Yeah.
Basically, they were saying, why are we going to use $22.5 million in what they call free cash to basically pay down the levy so that the property bill.
So people don't have to pay so many taxes.
So they're, you know, as they're giving relief to residential property tax owners.
Yeah.
Property holders. And, you know, why are we giving that money back? Don't you know we could spend a lot more on everything mm-hmm. we ever dreamed of? Mm-hmm. And it was actually the city manager. And this is basically a story that is repeated every year, where the city manager says, you know, councilors, that sounds all well and good, but, you know, a lot of us are trying to look out for the person who is property rich and cash poor. You know, somebody who's basically been living here their whole life and they have an own home.
But they can get an abatement though. They can get an abatement.
No, you cannot. You don't get abatements for hardship. You get abatements because the property is not valued appropriately. The state law requires the city to assess your property at full fair market value. There are exemptions, like elderly exemptions, give a break. Those were all part of the votes that took place last night.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, but a lot of those hardship cases probably are on people that are older that have lived in their houses for a long time.
Right. So the only effective means, legal means that the city has to address that are some of these exemptions. You can also defer it if you want to.
Yeah.
There are mechanisms for doing that. Or they can basically just try and keep the residential tax rate sufficiently low that you don't get whacked. Louis has been, for quite a few years, said for 20 years, we've pretty much had a policy that we, you know, even as there are tax increases, nobody should get, you know, sticker shock, like in 1 year to have things, you know, just double or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so they basically allocate free cash and do whatever it takes so that there's much more of a gradual rise in the residential tax bills. And, you know, and that's the reason why they're using free cash to basically kind of pay it down is to
prevent the sticker shock. But I thought his basic reply was more that we have gotten to do anything we wanted to do, counselors.
We've managed
having
to do
that $20 million, and they were, because everyone was like focusing on that $20 million, meanwhile he's citing all the affordable housing money that's gone out. So to me, that was more of the issue than
right. Well, whatever. And a big part of that is because of the commercial development, because that's really where who's paying most of those bills.
That's true.
You know, and they just, you don't want to really kind of give it, you don't want to really sock it to them, especially the longtime residents. You know, and you know, there is a kind of a nonsense argument that some of these counselors love to spew, which is that somehow, oh, because your property values have gone up, you should be more than happy. I say, well, you know, there are a lot of us who've lived in our homes who still think of it as our homes, and the fact whether it's worth, you know, a nickel or a dollar is unimportant to us. What's important is just the here and now. To me, my house is a roof over my head.
Well, unless you wanted to move somewhere and sell
if I want to go cash out, and you know, so is that what the goal is? You know,
but you make it sound like it's a bad thing. Some people may want to move into a smaller space.
Well, if they want to, that's their choice. But I don't think people should be forced to do so because of the taxes getting back too high.
Well,
and I know, but a couple of these
you can always take out a second mortgage or something or whatever. I don't feel that badly for people that have $1 million properties. I'm sorry, that's just me. But
well, I mean, you know, what people like I would do is, you know, we'll just increase the rents. So
no, you
there you have it.
And you know,
well,
it.
No,
you've got other options.
Do it.
I know that, and you wouldn't do that, and you have other options. You're not
but not everybody's in that position. So.
No, but I wonder how many really are. I'm just saying. I think there's ways that we can work around that. So
yeah, but well, the only point I really want to make and stress here is that, you know, many people who are here for the long haul, they're not. You know, they're not sort of overjoyed because their properties have gone up in value, because it's not a value that means anything to them.
That guy that commented, he had bought his house, I think, 8 years ago or something, and it's doubled or 60. And he said, I should pay more. So I don't know. I just, very few people like him, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in principle, you should be, you know, just because your property jumps up a lot doesn't mean necessarily your taxes should. Because, you know, for example, if everybody's property doubled, should the city take in twice as much money and therefore spend twice as much on anything and everything?
No, but they do. No. But your taxes will go up as it'd be crazy.
Yeah, we'll go up incrementally. And incremental. I think that's kind of, and that's really all Louis was saying, is that we want things to sort of slow and steady growth, not catastrophic or shocking growth.
Right. Okay.
So that was one thing. I find it interesting because I have a particular interest in municipal finance and just how to, you know, how all of that works, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think sometimes there are things, if somebody tunes into a city council meeting and then they just hear the lingo being spread around, they go, what the hell are they talking about? You know?
How many of them tune into the city council meeting?
I don't know, but if they do, they might turn it off pretty quickly because they go, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that it's sort of a topic area really is, so I think it was a week ago, there was a discussion or a proposal, or I think it was a city council order expressing some concerns about some parents not getting access for their kids into certain
programs.
That drew
a lot of public comment.
Tremendous amount. Yeah.
Which and not necessarily from real privileged type people, but people that really needed, single parents that needed coverage. Yeah.
But Ellen Semenoff pointed out, I said, you know, listen, it's not necessarily the financial resources that are the limiting factor here. It's that you need staff and you need programs.
Right.
And you can't just sort of, you know, just throw people in a room. And that's not a program,
true.
You know? So it wasn't everything everybody wanted, but Denise Simmons actually brought up a discussion about, you know, that maybe that we should have better ways of getting people, keeping people in the loop and informed. And she brought up a topic which really kind of opens the door to quite a few topics, having to do with what they call community schools and community neighborhood councils as sort of a nice thing that's been around for a long time.
Do they still exist? I remember they were still exist. My kid was at school, but
I think some of them are
not as effective, maybe because of COVID they haven't.
Yeah, I think that we haven't really utilized that mechanism a whole lot in recent years. They tended to become sort of like, well, so-and-so was the staff person for this, you know, Longfellow Community School, and that person liked to do calligraphy or something like that. So that's the calligraphy program, right? But it wasn't like it was necessarily getting a lot of review, or the neighborhood councils that had been set up some years ago were actively involved in helping shape those programs. I actually think it's a great thing. And I think we ought to be putting more attention into those and finding a way of making the most of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. We do have school buildings, COVID notwithstanding, those resources actually could be better utilized to provide programming and just space for people, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever I think about neighborhood councils, I think about it in sort of this this interplay with neighborhood associations. You know, where I live, we had the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Association and the Longfellow Neighborhood Council. And I was always a little confused because it seemed oftentimes that, you know, one was being informing.
Well, one's more school related though. One was definitely more school.
Well, I think this is that there is an independence to neighborhood associations that is, they are not connected to city government as such.
And not connected to, they're not necessarily parents of kids in schools.
Some are, some aren't, you know, it really, they can be defined any way you want. You know, some of them were defined as just sort of.
So what's your point about opposition?
Well, I just sort of think that there is, you know, remember earlier this year, I think it was earlier this year, somebody was raising hell about neighborhood associations being unrepresentative and they should.
But wasn't that also on the agenda?
There was a report back from the manager about just updating the list
on community
website.
Right.
But I think that there's a worthy discussion that should be had, and not necessarily by city councilors, but by everybody to sort of say, well, what do you want? You know, if you live in a neighborhood, what kind of resources do you really want? Do you want to how can you make use of that school building that's up the street from you? You know, how can we make this whole system work pretty well?
But I think the issue is our demographics have changed. We have a lot of renters, young people that, I just think the interests have changed.
And that's why neighborhood councils should be more active so that
the programming and activities can change with the people. They have to recruit the people to be involved with them. Yeah.
They absolutely should. Right. So I'm just
saying. I think there's so many other groups now that people are gravitating. Democratic Socialists.
I know, but these are political groups.
That's how people see things, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know about that, but I know that some people think of everything as politics. But a lot of people, especially parents, do not, you know, they still see things in terms of resources.
So let's just beef that up then.
Programming. I'm glad Denise Simmons brought that up. And I hope some of the ne'er-do-wells put to sleep any notion, which I think they have, that somehow political people should have any kind of say-so over neighborhood associations. But the thing is, we do have these mechanisms of neighborhood councils or community school neighborhood councils that are a really good way to sort of basically match up city services with individual neighborhood needs.
All right, but real quickly, how did neighborhood councils, how did they get their members? How were they recruited?
I don't remember.
So they don't fall under this whole boards, commissions, whatever thing?
They were somewhat independent. I think they were basically existed under the umbrella of the Department of Human Services programs.
Okay, all right.
Because the community schools, even though the activities are taking within school department assets.
No, I understand.
It was still administered through the Department of Human Services program.
Right.
So I'm not saying what should happen exactly, but to say, I'm glad that conversation is being had.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I think that there's something really worth doing there. And, you know, honestly, there's been, you know, I think kind of for all the wrong reasons, been some emphasis in this past year about, you know, some people getting all worked up about neighborhood conservation districts, and who, you know, who has a right to
representation. Who's representing us?
You know, who's representing, you know, and who has a right to advocate, and to what degree does the government have authority to rule the day, and how much of this can and should take place independently.
Just because you own property doesn't mean you have a better voice than I do.
Right, but I think in terms of some things, the some state things law actually says you do.
Right. Right. Okay.
You know, you're the taxpayer, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that, you know, as we bend the year into next, getting a little more clarity about some of those matters would be a
good. And it's true, like you said, the human service positions, it's happening all over the country. There's staff shortages in, you can name the field, and people don't have truck drivers. They don't have delivery people. They don't have, you know, daycare. It's happening everywhere. And I don't know, I think people realize they can get paid money more. Maybe they're doing gig work. I don't know what they're doing, but it's an issue.
Yeah, definitely an issue.
So we have 1 minute left of this segment. You want to just preview what we might cover?
One thing that, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised if that we should talk a little bit about, not just the how you get registered to vote and how you can vote, but some of else is what's been going on. You know, so for example, all of the major political action committees or political groups that you, if you have, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, the slates. They've
kind of chimed in about this.
Yeah, and you can show that in your.
Sort of show that a little bit. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that, again, I put up your candidate pages, and I contacted all the candidates today about topics. And, you know, voters should really vote for the individuals, but to whatever degree you need advice, some people do rely on slates. Yep. For better or worse, so we'll talk a little bit about that.
But no editing on those candidate pages. It's just, unless it's offensive, right?
Right.
Okay.
So I think
we'll see you in the next segment then.
All right, on Cambridge Inside Out.
3 minutes. Bye.